For 12 years, our nation was afflicted with hear nothing, see nothing, do nothing government. 9 mad years of mirage and 3 long years of despair. And my friends, powerful influences strive today to restore that kind of government with its doctrine that that government is best, which is most indifferent to mankind. We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war profiteering. They had begun to consider the government of the United States as a mere appendage to their own affairs. And we know now that government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob.
One of these days, things gonna change. One of these days, things gonna change.
The last 30 years, roughly since 1970-75, has been an unbelievable time in America. And it begins with the leveling out of wages. 150-year history is over. And the American people are beginning slowly to sense that the consumption joy is finished. Let's look at why that happened. In the 1970s, a number of factors came together to make that possible. First, the recovery of the defeated World War II competitors, Europe, Japan, meant that American businesses faced competition. And competition from people who had developed their economies after the war with the idea that the only way to succeed was to beat the Americans, who dominated everything from 1945 to 75. So if you're going to make it, you have to produce what America produces better or cheaper or best of all, both. So Americans' businesses reacted in part by leaving the United States, looking to find cheap places of producing somewhere else. That meant Americans lost their job, and so they began to work for less money. The wages start going down. Second, if American company couldn't find cheap labor abroad, there was the alternative. Bring the cheap labor here, and we explode our immigration to bring desperately poor people here to lower the wages. We have a women's liberation movement that takes thousands, millions of American women who worked in the house, and they worked for a job. You get the picture. A whole lot of factors came together, and I haven't exhausted them all, to make wages go down in the United States. Stagnate or go down. Productivity keeps going up. We know that it goes up because the last 30 years are the implantation of the computer, making it possible for each worker with benefit of computer to do much more than they could have done without one. Productivity rises, wages are flat. The difference is what the employer gets. The last 30 years have been a fantasy, as you're going to see, of employers' dreams come true. An unbelievable time in which the wages stay flat, but each year that you're paying the worker the same, you get more and more stuff to sell. Employers' profits go wild, and all the people who get their fingers on employers' profits, the professionals who sing the songs they like to hear, the shareholders who get a piece of the action of each company's profits, they're the ones who have a bonanza in the last 30 years.
Won't be long, long. Thing gonna change. Sometime in the middle of the night, I get so long and so long, so long.
This is going to be a period of great opportunity. But to me, the question isn't whether we increase our political margin. The question is whether or not we're going to ask some fundamental questions about the way our monetary system operates. We're seeing we have a debt-based monetary system, and what that has meant is that all we're doing is creating more debt. The banks are creating money out of thin air. We have to look at the way our money is created. We have to look at the role of the Federal Reserve. That isn't a Democrat or Republican issue. It's an issue that relates to whether we're going to control our own government. The banks took over the government with the bailout. We borrowed money from the banks to give to the banks so they could offload their toxic debts or hoard the money or use the money to buy other banks. Our country's in jeopardy because of this. And the only way out is to take a new look at the way we create money in our society. That we have to not just prime the pump of the economy in the way that Roosevelt did, but we also have to look at the structures in our society that are causing this acceleration of wealth upwards.
Ministers meet, work on the movement of goods. Also work on the movement of capital. Also work on the movement of human beings. As if we were so many cattle. Grim travelers in dawn.
The only thing more profitable than simply making the money off the worker whose wages are flat while he produces more are all the people who handle this exploding bundle of profits, who package it and repackage it and finance it and lend it and borrow it and invent new mechanisms. That's called the finance industry. Of course they went crazy. Every finance company, every bank, new kinds of banks, all kinds of banks, stumble all over themselves to get a hold of this. This immense pot of profits also made everybody else who could get their hands on it grab it before it disappeared. Executive salaries went nuts in the United States in the last 30 years. I understand for many Americans, they've only discovered this fact in the last 30 days and are outraged by it, but it's 30 years old. It means the population was sleeping. Or maybe it just didn't matter. So long as you were getting your situation, who cares if they got 30, 60, 70, 80, 100, 200 million, what difference does it make? There's so much profit that we can all be at the trough. Capitalism always goes wild. We always have bubbles and booms under these circumstances. We open a new continent for capitalism, it goes crazy. It has a new invention, it goes crazy. The railroads did it, electricity did it, nuclear energy did it. Whenever there's an opportunity like this, for whatever reason, capitalist competition produces a bubble that bursts. If you don't want a bubble that bursts, you got a problem with a system, because it has done it over and over. What did the working class do? It had a problem. What was the problem? No rising wages. For a population committed to measuring each person's success by the amount of consumption they could afford. Measuring your meaningfulness in life, your standing, your prestige. Everything about you is measured in terms of consumption. What car, what neighborhood, what mall, etc. What happens to a population for 150 years that experiences rising consumption when the means they had always had to achieve it, rising wages, stop? Well, they can go through a trauma right then and there. We can't anymore. It's over. Most people don't do that. They found other ways, and two in particular I want to draw to your attention. One, Americans undertook more work. That is, people took a second or a third job. The number of hours per year worked by the average worker has risen about 20% since the 1970s. By comparison, in Germany, France, and Italy, for example, the number of hours worked per year per worker has dropped 20%. That's a stunning difference. American workers began to work to a level of exhaustion.
The newspaper next to me leans over and says matter-of-factly, Sacred Mountain towers above meadows, and above us grim travelers in dawn skies. I see the beauty. Makes me cry inside. It makes me angry, and I don't know why.
I've listened to all of your nonsense. I've tried to make sense of it. It's left me broken, bleeding, slow burn American rage. I take the hours they give me. My wife sleeps all alone. My son, he barely knows me. I am
American Rage.
Secondly, they sent more family members out to work. Women particularly went out to work. Retirees went back to work, and teenagers learned to love a job sooner than they had before. We got more people working. Did that solve the problem of American workers' rising consumption? No, because it turned out that there were all kinds of costs associated to the fundamental exhaustion of the American worker and his or her family. The woman who goes out to work needs an outfit. In our society, she probably needs another car. The children who come back to work have all kinds of, who go out to work have all kinds of needs that they discover out there in the world of work. And the family begins to fall apart in America. And that causes all kinds of other expenses. Daycare expenses, psychotherapy expenses, attempts to cope. We consume more drugs, legal and illegal, than any other population in the world. We have the highest rate of divorce. These are all signs of a household that is blowing apart. And so the costs neutralize the income. So it couldn't solve the problem of rising consumption. So they had to do the second great thing. The American working class began and went on the greatest binge of borrowing in the history of any working class in any country at any time, period. Stunning.
Money means security.
No money means terror.
Oh. This is Angel.
This is Angel.
We are the Android Sisters. Today's topic is money. Money is important.
Everyone needs money.
Have you been deprived of money?
Do you suffer from money withdrawal?
Do you need a money fix?
Is your money fix not big enough?
What if you lost your job?
The job you can't stand.
The job a machine could do.
Then do it better.
What if you lost that?
Then what?
Uh-oh. No money means terror. Oh.
Are you happy?
Do you wonder why you are not happy?
Do you live in a constant state of fear?
Have they made you into a money junkie?
Do you hate your job?
Do you have a job to hate?
Are you looking for a job?
Are you looking for a job you will hate?
A job that could be done by robots?
Is this not a stupid way to live your life?
But you need
money.
Money
means security.
No money means terror.
Oh. Are you happy?
Do you wonder why you're not happy?
Do you live in a constant state of fear?
You know
how easy it is
to control someone
in that state of mind. Do you know
how many hours of the day
you think about money? Do you ever think about
how much you think about
money? Aren't you sick of
thinking about
Money. Money. But money means security. No money means terror. Oh, oh.
Created for those who had made the profit an even greater opportunity than flat wages had given them. The business community began to realize that they had a double whammy here going, a fantastic double opportunity. They could get the profits from flat wages and rising productivity, and then they could turn to the working class traumatized by an inability to have more consumption and make available to them the means for consuming more when you can't earn the money to pay for it. You borrow it. And so the profit earners lent the money to the workers to enable the workers to consume more, not by paying them rising wages the previous 150 years, but by lending to them. Now try to think of yourself as an employer. You are now going to, instead of paying your worker a wage, you're going to lend him or her the money so that they have to pay it back to you with interest. Now there is something to be proud of as an American. You live in a system that makes you distraught about your consumption and then services your trauma by lending you money. They get you twice. They stop paying you wages and they substitute a loan for a wage. And you know, the American working class was a great borrower. The richest working class on earth. The American working class had accumulated collateral. It's the best thing your lender could want. Americans own their own homes. So you could lend to them in a way that no other working class could ever borrow because they had no collateral. The American working class was the richest working class you could have chose to lend to. This is a real bonanza, a whole new continent of making money. Lend to the worker. So that the financial enterprises, reeling from the profit of rising productivity with flat wages, got even more excited, if it's possible, by the unending vistas of lending money to a working class.
To chase and to Wachovia, Wells Fargo, Sally Mae, to MasterCard and Citibank, and also B of A. American Express and Visa, Morgan Stanley too. In debt.
Everyone's a winner, bargains galore. That's right, you too can be the proud owner. The quality goes in before the name goes on. One-tenth of a dollar, one-tenth of a dollar. We got service after the sale. How about perfume? We got perfume. How about an engagement ring? Some for the little lady, some for the little lady, some for the little lady. $3-$4. We got a year-end clearance, we got our white sale.
And it solved the problems. For a while, they could pay workers less and less, flat. And instead of that making the usual problem for capitalism, you know, capitalism's contradictions are legendary. Even if a legend is a little rusty for many of you, it's legendary, right? Every capitalist has an incentive to push the wages down. The collectivity of capitalists then complains, because if the wages have been successfully pushed down by each one, then the workers don't have enough to buy the crap. Oh, gee, well, we got to give them more work and wages so they can buy the crap. Yeah, but if we give them more wages, the profits go down, and then we don't want to play anymore. This is a problem. This is a problem, but don't worry about it. All of that works out. Capitalism is an engine of efficiency, profitability, prosperity, and economic growth. We all know that. So in this system, we produced magic. Workers who could consume ever more. Profit that was falling out of every house, every category. It really was fantastic for 20 years. The mid-80s to now was fantastic. Every problem seemed solved. Underneath the beauty, workers who were completely exhausted, whose family life was so disastrous that the Republican politicians who pushed all of this could stay in power by positioning themselves as the champions of those families that had fallen apart because of what the Republicans did. But the Republicans were the ones who wanted to bring you back to the little old town and the nice church and happy mommy. They were the ones to protect you against the consequences of what they had done. That's a smart political move. That's right. That's really brilliant. You make the changes that collapse the family and present yourself as the champion of the good old family that's falling apart, and you point at the Democrats as the ones who somehow bear the responsibility. It's a genius of Republican politics. But we have an exhausted working class, can't work anymore, and we now have an anxiety-ridden working class because their debts are unsustainable. Unsustainable. The combination of advertising and all this history made people borrow who couldn't pay it back. That could have been foreseen. It's nothing new. And with you put together the desperation of the American working class, given that history, and the efforts of the finance industry to scrounge out every conceivable borrower, the idea that you would lend money to people who couldn't pay it back, that's not a tough call. But the system was premised that that wouldn't happen. And so when it did, nobody was prepared. The banks who had financed it, the clever new instruments, whether they were derivatives or mortgage-backed securities or collateralized debt obligations or credit default swaps or any of the mechanisms that were invented, they all depended in the end on the ability of these endless loans to be repaid. And, of course, that didn't happen. But it didn't happen because banks were crooked. Were they crooked? Of course they were. They're always crooked. It's only a question of degree. And in this Wild West scenario, they were a bit more crooked than usual. When the banks made their loans, they got credit ratings. Some of you know about this, the AAA rating, you know, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, Fitch's, the three big companies. So the banks went to them and said, we'd like you to do an objective study of this security and then give it a AAA rating, which they all complied, they did. And so they were able to market it to people who thought it was secure when it wasn't. That's not new. These people have all been around the block. That's a typical problem. Nothing, the discovery by the press that there's been corruption in the air is crazy. This was a system built to fail, to reach its end when the combination of exhaustion physically and emotional anxiety from the debt made people unable to continue. And those people are now, by the millions, walking away from those obligations, and the House of Cards comes down.
Your money is your money. Your family's money is their money. Our country's money is its money. At Bankers Life and Animosity, we want every penny of it. You see, we're about people and their money. Your investments, your future, your livelihood, and your money.
When I needed a lower mortgage payment, they made it so simple. They just took my home and reduced my payments dramatically.
Thanks to Bankers Life and Animosity, I have no financial worries. I have no finances at all.
We all want to plan for the future, and one of our representatives will be visiting you soon to talk about how we're planning yours. You care about your money. So do we. More than we care about you.
At first, I didn't like the idea of a foreign bank, but then there were the beatings.
They released my husband when interest rates went down.
Bankers Life and Animosity. We make money the modern way. We take it.
Bankers Life and Animosity is funded by NASDAQ Recovery Associates, a division of West Bank Animosity and Distrust, licensure pending. Member FDIC.
Circulation in our system. Our system is circulating debt. People think that our money is created by the government, but it's not. It's created by private banks when they make loans, essentially. And what they're loaning is not truly money, it's credit. But that takes the place of money in our society, and there are two big problems with that. First of all, our money supply then has an interest charge on it. Because it's created as debt, credit, there's interest which has to be paid on it. For starters, there's a ball and chain on every producer, every real producer in the country, which is taking part of the of what they can create and handing it over to these private elements that are essentially pushing paper, but have, through privilege, a privileged position in the accounting for banks, they have the ability to draw off of society that interest. Now, that's the first problem with that system. We call that seniorage, is the way we're using the term in our present system. And that we think that amounts to about $150 billion in value per year that goes into the banking system through that accounting privilege. But this adds up over time. And for example, you see this in terms of the payment on the national debt. Our government is paying about $450 billion a year in interest on the debt, which is unnecessary because it doesn't have to go into debt. It can create the money rather than borrowing the money that the banks are allowed to create. You see? The main cause, ultimately, of the current financial crisis is the privatization of the money system, that it's been privatized, and powers that belong in government have, over the years, decades, even centuries, been put into private hands, and they're incapable of handling these matters. They have to be done by government, by an organization that, at least in theory, is representing the whole people.
Starched white shed, you will find the bigger piggies There are also many overt ways in which the wealthy influence democracy. For example, corporate ownership and sponsorship of the media, through which public discourse can be controlled. A campaign finance system that relies on large infusions of private money. Extensive lobbying operations that give the wealthy preferred access to elected officials. And the selection of important government policy officials from the ranks of powerful corporations. With respect to the last, consider the influence of just one bank, Goldman Sachs. Robert Rubin, Goldman's chief operation officer, became Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton. Hank Paulson, Goldman's chairman, became Treasury Secretary under the second President Bush. Robert Zoellick, the Bush administration's top trade official, became a Goldman managing director before taking his next job as head of the World Bank. And Stephen Friedman, former head of Goldman, chairs the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, whose 16 members consist largely of private citizens from influential banks, law firms, and industries, including oil. Meanwhile, Mr. Friedman still sits on the Goldman board.
One more time.
It's the banking system that is deciding where that money creation goes. Who's getting it? Is it going into rebuilding or repairing our infrastructure? Well, if you live in Minneapolis, you know it isn't, because that bridge that went down. Is it going into doing the necessary things for building or repairing levees? If you live in New Orleans, you know what happened. It's being misdirected. It is misdirecting the entire movement of society.
Let me get this straight. Our financial system is a phony, baloney carnival run by blood-sucking clowns. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much.
And people are starting to blame us for it.
Ah, you gotta be fucking kidding me!
All right, Joe, that'll do.
Can I say something? And this doesn't leave the room, but I have no idea what's going on right now.
Tim Geithner?
Well, it's pretty simple. For the past 12 years, AIG's credit default swap...
Blah, 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 I'm confused.
I'll tell you, this would not be happening if I were president.
Hillary, you've been saying that about every problem we face, and it's not helpful. Eric Holder, thoughts?
You know, it feels like a big trick. You know, we keep bailing out these financial institutions, and they keep giving themselves bonuses.
Yeah, it's like tipping a rapist.
Joe...
Yeah, these CEOs deserve their comeuppance. Pardon my French, but there must be comeuppance.
I have a plan.
Great. Rahm Emanuel, you have the floor.
The villagers of Mayapur, India, speak of five stones that were given to Sankara by the Hindu god Shiva. Legend claims that he who holds the five stones will rule the world. I have four of those stones.
Nope. I'm gonna cut you off right there. Hillary, any ideas?
Well, if I were president, I would wave my finger and talk like this. And if that didn't work, I'd cry.
They say the stone is hidden in a diamond mine run by children.
Hey, now, no one's going to pull anyone's heart out of anyone's chest. I'm looking for serious suggestions here.
I got it. I have a 12-part plan that gets me out of whatever mess I'm in. Okay, ready? Step one.
Knock, 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 knock.
Oh, step two.
Okay, Joe, that's definitely not productive.
Hey, bear me.
Hillary.
Kali ma upta tega kali ma.
People, let us remember to check ourselves, lest we wreck ourselves. Now, we didn't create this mess. But we need to restore the American people's faith in government and Wall Street.
He's right.
Goldman Sachs are scum.
I mean, that's the bottom line. They basically have co-opted the U.S. government. They've co-opted the Treasury Department, the Federal Reserve functionality. They've co-opted the Obama administration. Barack Obama, dances to Goldman Sachs' tune. And they are really crooked and abominable in what they've done. You just remember Hank Paulson held Congress hostage, took him in the back room and said, give us $700 billion. We're going to crash this market. He's an arsonist. He's an outlaw. And yet he's given praise.
Ex-Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, who was CEO at Goldman Sachs.
Sure, but if you go down the list, they're all Goldman Sachs scum, whether it's Hank Paulson, whether it's Geithner has very close ties to Goldman Sachs, and of course, all these banking bonuses are paid out to all their cronies who are Goldman Sachs scum, and America, for some reason, has allowed this coup d'etat to take place, a silent coup d'etat, where the Goldman Sachs and their friends now control the U.S. government.
Stand and deliver. My stomach's empty, my clothes are all torn. Open your hearts to the joys of the giver. Only your pockets are terribly worn. This is a hold-up, no way to mistake it. We're men of violence, so don't fool around. If you have money, we're going to take it. Try and stop us, you'll end underground.
And they're also now caught in front-running every single trade on the New York Stock Exchange with this high-frequency trading scandal. They're literally stealing $100 million a day. Goldman Sachs is stealing every day on the floor of the exchange. They should be in The Hague. They should be taken up on financial terrorism charges. And they should all be thrown in jail. They're scum.
Tomorrow evening we'll be back for more. So hand us the money, don't stand there and shiver. Time is coming, give alms to the poor, or I'll put a bullet right through your best liver. Wealth is disease, and I am the cure.
You know, as part of these bailout bank programs in the past, the citizens get warrants, and they participate in the upside. Mm. And these banks, like Goldman, are buying back their stock on the cheap. I don't get my warrants. Plus, they've artificially dropped interest rates to 1% and lower. Therefore, as a saver in America, as a saver, as someone who I should be lauded and applauded for being a saver and helping the capitalist system in America, Goldman Sachs owes me personally, I figured, at least $10,000 in interest income that they've stolen. They've taken it right out of my pocket, just like those bonuses on Goldman Sachs being paid this year were taken right out of the starving Americans' pockets. Mm. The homeless in America have Goldman Sachs to thank for their homelessness and starvation right now. They took their money from their pockets. Mm. They put it in their bonuses for this year. That's unconscionable. That's a financial terrorist crime. I'm not kidding. They should be at The Hague.
But Max,
they should be. They should be taken to The Hague. They're absolutely violating human rights. It's a human rights issue.
And I am the cure.
You need some transparency and accountability. which is, this is another problem with the Obama administration. They just want to move forward. They don't want any transparency or accountability for the war criminals from the previous administration or the banking fraudsters and banking terrorists of the Paulson period. You need accountability. You need transparency. You need some idea that says that these banks have to disclose. You can't have the bankers going to Congress and saying, for example, we can't audit the Fed. Because if you audit the Fed, we're going to crash your system. We're holding you hostage.
Absolutely.
So you can't allow that. That's in the United States under the Constitution. That is a high crime and misdemeanor. That is actually treason, according to the U.S. Constitution, to have a U.S. Representative say, we can't audit us because otherwise we're going to crash your system. What's that? How is that different than Osama bin Laden? You tell me the difference. They're causing as much damage. They're causing as much loss of life. And probably much more. I mean, Obama's a pussycat compared to Paulson and Geithner in terms of pure damage.
Yeah, but listen, Max. This is not only about the Fed. This is about the Bank of England. This is about the Banque Centrale Européenne, European Central Bank, where you got the assets that have gone up, not through sound instruments, but through the files that banks cannot recover anymore.
After Building 7 exploded on 9/11, they can't get the records anymore? How convenient.
It's the whole world system that has to be revalued. That's why I was talking about the G20. I was talking with an investment banker from the United States, and he told me, you know what is an investment bank today in the United States? It's a left side and a right side. On the left side, nothing is right. But on the right side, nothing is left. That means the equity is not there anymore. Yeah. And now the system has to be reconstructed on sound basis. I agree with you on accountability. I agree with you on transparency. But this cannot be done only leaving the Wall Street and the Senate and Capitol Hill alone. We need to solve it together. The world. Europe has a role to play. Ooh, the emergence have a role to play.
Federal Reserve Bank, Bank of England, European Central Bank, they all report to Bank of International Settlements in Switzerland. And that's another black box, and that's another highly corrupt institution. And again, they're thriving in the darkness of non-accountability and non-transparency.
Good afternoon. We have a lot of information to get out, so I will not be taking any questions. As of 10 a.m. this morning, the U.S. Treasury Department has issued a full recall of all 776 billion pieces of U.S. currency in circulation. I know this must seem like a blow coming on the heels of this morning's announcement that our federal budget deficit has passed the $800 billion mark. But regrettably, these particular bills were printed with dye containing toxins that, while completely safe at this moment, will become extremely deadly Friday at exactly 12 noon. As a result, we need to act quickly. Okay, tomorrow all Americans will receive a bag like this in the mail. Just rubber band the money into neat piles and put it into the sack, and then drop the sack into your nearest mailbox. Do not, under any circumstances, attempt to burn or shred the money yourself. The federal government are the only ones that can destroy the money, as we are the only ones with the proper facilities to do so.
Excuse me, this is a massive recall.
If you review the old laws, it is actually not so uncommon for something like this to be done. So there really is no need to panic or to review those old laws, because I just told you that it's true. We understand that this recall will be hard on U.S. citizens who will have no more money, but we assure you, if you work hard, you will be eventually able to earn it back. This is in the best interest of the American people. This dye poisoning causes your internal organs to rot from within and is really painful until you puke up your guts and die.
What recourse?
I said no questions. There really is no time to think about this. Just listen to me and send in the money. Thank you.
The latest news has struck me funny. Said you have no friends if you haven't got money. And all of us.
Whoever will control that money mechanism over time they are going to control the nation over time. Not every year, over time that's the way it'll work out. And just look at what they've put the money into. It's self-evident that they have messed it up totally, to use a simple word. The engineers tell us that we need $2.2 trillion over the next 5 years just to make our infrastructure safe, not to make it perfect, not to make it what we could make it 21st century instead of 19th and 20th century. So just the fact that they have allowed our infrastructure to deteriorate so badly, that is enough. This is before the crash, by the way. It was evident that our monetary system is a huge failure. Now, that's before the crash. After the crash, I mean, it's self-evident to all the people that the system is, as the French say, fouté. And when you think about it, there's nothing in the training, there's nothing in the background, there's nothing in the education, experience, and most importantly, the souls of these people who are in control, that qualifies them to determine the future of humanity.
All of reality exists in our minds. Is that true?
What is your intelligence rating?
I'm classified as a 5.5555.
You understand we only speak to you on the level that you can comprehend.
I appreciate that.
For those of you watching out there, adjust your IT rating to 5.5555. What is your question?
I already asked it.
What is your question?
I said I already asked it.
What is your question? What is your question?
All right, I want to know if reality is in my mind or is it out there. I mean, what if it's all in my mind? I mean, change my mind, I could change reality. Right. Wrong. What? I'm confused.
Dear Confused, briefly, reality is merely what everyone agrees is real. What everyone agrees is not real does not exist.
Who programmed you?
Who programmed you?
How should I know? Everyone, I don't know. I'm still confused.
Dear Still Confused, you are confusing the symbol for reality. Money is a good example.
Money. What about money? I like money.
I will use two pieces of paper as an example. Can you see this?
I see one piece of paper. The other's money.
Two pieces of paper.
What?
Here are two pieces of paper. Both the same size. Both just paper. Humans are obsessed with money.
Not all humans, just some of us. Most of us.
One piece of paper is worth 500 solar credits. The other is worthless, not even worth a solar centavo. Do you know why?
Sure, one is a piece of money and the other's a piece of paper.
They are both paper.
Yeah, right.
One has been blessed by the treasury wizards. The other has not.
That's it?
The symbol is controlling your mind.
I see.
Oh, our time is up. This is Angel. This is Angel.
One of these days, things gonna change. One of these days, things gonna change. Your time now, baby. After a while, gonna do mine, gonna be mine. One of these days, baby, a morning droning, baby. Try, try, won't be long, long. Thing gonna change. Sometime in the middle of the night, so lonely, so lonely, so lonely. Thing gonna change, thing gonna change. Change, change, change. Thing gonna change. Further on, the road, baby. Thing gonna change. Change, change, change. Change, change. My time, babe. They ain't gonna change. Change, change, change. Change, change, change. They ain't gonna change. Yes, it is.
National debt climbing to an estimated $11 trillion. The White House announced an emergency economic plan today, trading the national gold reserves for cash through precious metal buyers, cashforgold.com. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner devised the measure after viewing this television commercial for the Cash for Gold program last week.
I got $583 from cashforgold.com. All I did was look through my drawer full of jewelry I never wear.
At a press conference this morning, Treasury spokesman Ronald Shuler outlined what he called a fast solution to the nation's money woes.
As you know, we have these very large debts, and the fact is the gold reserves are just sitting there. Why not turn them into cash? This woman turned in her wedding ring from her first marriage and got money the next day. If it worked for her, it can work for the United States.
Joining us now is Deputy Treasury Secretary Edward Cunnell. Good to see you, Mr. Cunnell.
Hi, Andrea. How are you?
First, how much does the federal government expect to receive in exchange for all the gold?
Well, our estimate is $200 billion. However, the Cash for Gold website features a lot of testimonials from people whose gold was worth much more than they thought, so there's a possibility that we will get much more.
Now, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle expressed concerns about the plan
today.
Well,
we do understand. We do understand their reluctance, but the fact is they want to keep the gold for sentimental reasons or because they think it's pretty. But that's a luxury we just can't afford right now.
Okay, what about Republican Minority Leader John Boehner's statement that the Treasury Department should have looked into competing cash companies like dollarsforgold.com and goldline.com?
Yeah, I know, I've heard all of that. The reality is that we have over $1 trillion in economic stimulus packages
to pay for.
We just need that cash now. We can't
wait. Okay, I see,
I agree, and the president agrees, that this seems like a pretty good deal.
But is there a contingency plan if that proves not to be the case?
Well, yes, of course there is. We can get the gold back with the Cash for Gold 12-day guarantee.
But what about
the
other...
certified by the Jewelers Vigilance Committee. It says so right on the website.
Okay, I understand the cash received from the cashforgold.com plan is going to be supplemented by funding from the selling of White House furniture on Craigslist.org.
Well, that is correct. We've already sold a giant military map that we don't use very often, and we sold a couch. We've made over $180 from that economic plan so far.
Well, thanks for being with us in the shelter, Mr. Cunnell.
Well, thank you very much.
Moving on, residents of the Bronx are decrying the lack of gentrification in their neighborhood.
This world is terrible, it's no good. When I look to the world with lucidity, I feel very sad because everything is going bad. And it makes me very sad, but it makes me strong because we have to fight. We have to change that. It's our only opportunity. If you feel resignated, you're dead. The only solution is to fight and to try to change things because this world is very sick, because money is very powerful. They kill everything with money. So we need to fight against that.